time for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 3 years has shared with us her decades' research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon. This is Dialogue Conspiracy in Carmel, California. It's January the 13th, I believe, 1975. This is number 179 of Dialogue Conspiracy, in case you keep cassettes or tapes, I hope you do, of the shows. The first thing I want to mention is a magazine article by Fletcher Prouty in Genesis Magazine, February 1975. It's called The 40 Committee. It's an excellent article of background of explains the committee in the White House and the National Security Council, the group that he calls who play God, the men who play God. This committee orders assassinations, overthrows countries, engineers deaths. 5 men are on this committee. It's deceptive because there are not 40 people. There are not that many controls. There are 5 people on this committee of 40, the 40 committee of the CIA. And it's a very important article to save. Get Genesis Magazine or copy it, buy it preferably, and cut this out and save it in your collection of articles on the CIA or political assassinations, because I refer to the 40 Committee many times, and this gives a background of how the committee was formed and the things that they're up to. For example, an offer of $50 million for the CIA to overthrow Libya, the government headed by Colonel Gaddafi, or the plan of Mr. Hammer, Armin Hammer, to get behind this overthrow of Libya. It goes into plans of the Watergate team that they were allegedly about to kill a president of Panama. These orders come from the White House, the National Security Council, and as I say, I won't run down in the time we have today what is covered in that article, because if you are serious researchers or interested in the framework of conspiracies, assassinations, kidnappings, and overthrowing countries, you can obtain this magazine, Genesis Magazine, February 1975. Fletcher Prouty worked for the Pentagon. He was a liaison between the CIA and the Pentagon. He's written a book called The Secret Team, and this is a superb article. It's very, very important to people to understand the framework of the CIA, of this secret committee, because they not only operate overseas in other countries, but are operating to overthrow this government and did achieve the effect they wanted in Dallas at the time that John Kennedy was killed. This was a military coup, according to my research, done by persons in the White House in the 40 Committee at that time, and the rest is just mopping up the coup that took place in 1963. A local matter that I do want to bring up on the program is the course at Monterey Peninsula College that I will be helping instruct with Ray Fabrizio. It begins in February. The sign-ups are taking place now. You can take the college course for credit, or you can take it without credit. You can visit the class and sign up and take it without getting credit. Humanities 195 is the number of the course. It's Wednesdays again from 2 to 4 like we did last spring. The name of the subject is Problems in Research, the Kennedy Assassinations, and it will go into Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy, and you can apply the research in that area to the other political assassinations or conspiracies that are taking place since 1963, domestic conspiracies and assassinations. The Assassination Information Bureau in Massachusetts, Cambridge, Massachusetts, is going to have a meeting January 31st, February 1st and 2nd, and as many people as possible from the East Coast can get there, or West if you want. I thought I would announce the nature of this conference I mentioned last week, but I want to give you enough time. It's really just in 2.5 weeks to make plans to attend if you want. It's at Boston University, and next week on the show I'll give the exact rooms, hopefully, and where the meetings will take place. If you don't have chance to listen every week and you want information on the lectures, write to an Assassination Information Bureau, 63 Inman Street, Cambridge, Massachusetts, 02139, and ask for a program of the conference. You may want to save this program even if you can't attend, and become familiar with the Assassination Information Bureau. The scheduled people speaking there right now, I've understood, are Penn Jones Jr., who's done extensive work on the Kennedy assassination and the murders that have followed related to the political assassinations. He's authored four books. The fourth one is just out now. Volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4, Forgive My Grief. Penn Jones will be there. Jeff Gerth will be there speaking about the links of Nixon to the Mafia and the links of Mafia, the John Kennedy assassination, the relationship of Florida, the Bahamas, to the Watergate, the whole connecting link like Dallas to Watergate in terms of Mafia links. Jeff Gerth will be there. Peter Del Scott will speak. He wrote one book on the war conspiracy and has an unpublished document on the Dallas assassination of President John Kennedy, and his subject also, his specialty is from Dallas to Watergate. Sherman Skolnick will speak. He has done extensive work into the plans to kill John Kennedy in Chicago, the second double for Oswald, the imprisonment of Abraham Bolden, the Secret Service agent who revealed the plans. And he also is knowledgeable on the killing of Fred Hampton, the Black Panther, and Mark Clark in Chicago. And he's known for his extensive research into the murder of Dorothy Hunt in December 1972, the bag woman for the Watergate. Sherman Skolnick will be there. And Don Freed, who wrote a play about the Rosenbergs that was produced on Broadway. He wrote Agony in New Haven, the links of Bobby Seale, the trial of Bobby Seale, and the U.S. government versus this black leader. And he also wrote Executive Action and helped with the movie and was behind Louis Tackwood and helped publish the book The Glass House Tapes, which is the link of the CIA to the Los Angeles Police Department and the White House plumbers. And he's helped Louis Tackwood spread his information when he surfaced from the Los Angeles Police Department and wanted to tell about the involvement of the CIA domestically. He's also producing now a movie on Sirhan Sirhan. And Ted Chirac will be there, hopefully with his movie, The Second Gun. He was in the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was shot. He's done 5 years of hard research into that story and the murder of Robert Kennedy. Bob Cutler will be giving a lecture. He's written a book on You, the Jury, regarding Chappaquiddick. He's done extensive work on the fact that Ted Kennedy did not drive the car and that this was a conspiracy up at Chappaquiddick. Bob Cutler lives nearby in Boston, and he will be there talking about the Ted Kennedy accident. Richard Popkin, who's now a professor, he has been for a long time, is going to attend and give lectures, and he has written a published book on the second Oswald. It was very important because there have been doubles in every political conspiracy since the John Kennedy assassination, all the major ones. Each patsy or fall guy has had a double. And Popkin will talk on the second Oswald. Wayne Chastain has written a book called Who Really Killed Dr. King and the Kennedys, and the Computer and People, formerly Computer and Automation, has carried sections of that book on the shooting of Martin Luther King. The last 11 issues from Computer and People have been on that subject. They've had an article or a chapter from Wayne Chastain's book, so that the Martin Luther King murder is covered and the John Kennedy assassination, the Chappaquiddick, the Robert Kennedy, and then the Wallace shooting is not covered in a lecture. Hopefully, a well-known investigator who has done extensive work on the John Kennedy assassination might attend the meeting, but he's doing work now in the investigation of the Wallace shooting and probably wants to continue his studies before he puts this work publicly before a forum of people. He wants to get the book published or work for a particular person who's interested in the Wallace shooting. And then I will be attending the conference and talking about the conspiracy chain, the 15 links or ingredients that are part of every CIA conspiracy. CIA includes the Defense Intelligence Agency and the FBI. And we'll cover from Dallas to Watergate, the John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Wallace, Chappaquiddick. And then I add the Sharon Tate-LaBianca murder, the use of Charlie Manson, and then the SLA as the beginning of the escalation of domestic violence and terrorism in order to finalize a total police state. Now, that is a very full conference for 3 days, but it's an interesting assembly of people who I respect as co-workers. Each one individually has worked extensively, hour after hour, day by day, week by week, and they have really been involved in not only their special subject, but relating their subject to the other assassinations. And I'm very enthusiastic about the group of people that will be in Boston. If you want information, write Assassination Information Bureau, 63 Inman Street, Cambridge, Massachusetts, 02139. And if you can't attend the conference in Boston and you want to send a donation of $1, $2, $5, or $10, or whatever it is to help defray the expenses of the conference, I'm sure they would appreciate it. And then you could also get on their mailing list and keep up with the assassination research. The news of the week continues to be the CIA story. A lot of headline articles breaking that they destroyed the microfilm of the Army intelligence gathering, and then a story that they didn't destroy this information. They still have it. And that the CIA is operating domestically. There's a lot more leaks on the evidence that they're locking domestically. And with all of the CIA stories breaking, it is important to remember that this is the second phase of the Watergate. I was hoping Watergate West would be the next phase. I didn't know that it would happen in the East with the CIA linked to the Watergate. I didn't think that this action would come as quickly as breaking open what I call Watergate West. But whatever form it comes, it's all going to link together anyway. And the Watergate investigation, the use of the CIA in Watergate, goes all the way back to Dallas, Texas, with the use of the CIA and the intelligence agencies in the killing of John Kennedy. This is why it was important to put Gerald Ford into the presidency, to help cover up these links as fast as they come in. And Gerald Ford was a member of the Warren Commission. The special prosecutor that was called into the Watergate was Leon Jaworski, who also worked with the Warren Commission representing the state of Texas, who came from the Anderson Foundation, the CIA front in Houston, where he was a director of the CIA. Well, another member of the CIA team, the secret team, is brought in to help cover up the investigation of the CIA, and his name is David Belin. Some of you may remember his name. I did a show about him last November when his book came out, and I'll talk about him again because in lieu of his being the special investigator for the CIA investigation, the Blue Ribbon Panel, they call it the Blue Ribbon Panel for Illegal Domestic Operations, they brought in David Belin of the Warren Commission, a CIA lawyer, to continue to bury the story of the CIA working inside the United States. David Belin's official title is Executive Director of the Blue Ribbon Commission investigating the CIA domestic activities. Belin is known for his work on the Warren Commission. He's from Lincoln, Nebraska. As I say, he's an attorney for the CIA, and he fits along with Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission to investigate this intelligence agency. The book that he published is titled November 22nd, 1963, You Are the Jury, published by Quadrangle Press. It's from the New York Times publishers. And Gerald Ford was the other member of the Warren Commission. David Belin was an attorney investigating witnesses for the Warren Commission, Warren Report. And Gerald Ford was the other author of this secret team who also wrote a book on the John Kennedy assassination. The book by David Belin is based upon faulty evidence. The important witnesses were not called before the commission, and he still is very selective in his book to quote certain people that are not important at all. The Warren Commission did not cross-examine any of the 552 witnesses. Belin's book is based upon wrong questions asked certain witnesses. It's based upon change of subject when important witnesses were on the stand, and the CIA use, I can't recall, of government agents when the questions got hot. Belin's favorite part of the book, he has the kickoff, and his book is based upon one of his favorite witnesses that he uses in interviews by the name of Johnny Calvin Brewer. And his book on page 23 after the introduction begins, I call it the kickoff of his favorite witness, a man who worked at Hardy's shoe store and who was responsible for calling the police when Lee Harvey Oswald was at a nearby theater. And Belin was the lawyer who interviewed John Calvin Brewer. And Brewer allegedly said that the reason he sent the police into the theater to look for Oswald was that Oswald looked funny. But I thought I would read you a little bit of the investigative report that Belin did on Brewer, being as he quotes him so much. In the Warren hearings, not the Warren report, but in the president's commissions on the assassination of President Kennedy, those are the 26 volumes, volume 7, page 1 to page 7, is the testimony of John Calvin Brewer that David Belin makes so much of in his book. And Brewer testifies that he was in the shoe store listening to the radio when the president was shot, and shortly afterwards he looked up and he saw a man in the lobby of the shoe store. And shortly afterwards, police cars were coming down Jefferson Boulevard because an officer had been shot. That was Officer J.D. Tibbett. He said the man who looked in his window just looked kind of funny, and then he went into the Texas Theater. So Brewer said, I walked in and I told the manager of the theater, there's a guy that looks suspicious, and the cashier then called the police. The lights went on and I saw the man. I saw a policeman approach Oswald. This is Brewer's testimony. He said there were a couple of officers ganging up on him, and he heard some of the police hollering at him, and then Oswald yelled, one of the policemen yelled to Lee Harvey Oswald in the theater, kill the president, will you? And they were charging him in the theater with killing the president of the United States. The police on the street were looking to see who killed Officer J.D. Tibbett, and there was no possible link of Lee Harvey Oswald to killing the president of the United States. But the lights went on, and a police officer runs up to Oswald and said, kill the president, will you? And they put handcuffs on him, and they beat him up. His face was injured. And Oswald was walking out of the theater hollering, I'm not resisting arrest. I'm not resisting arrest. And the charge was made by the local police that Oswald had killed the president. Now, after that testimony, I'm not resisting arrest, David Belin asked him the question of Mr. Brewer, when you first saw this man, when you saw him leave what you referred to as the lobby of your shoe store building, was the floor made of marble or concrete? Now, that was one of the funniest questions out of the 26 volumes that I ever read before I knew who David Belin was or knew that he was a CIA lawyer. He's talking about, he doesn't ask how the police would know that Oswald link him to the John Kennedy assassination because a police officer had been shot just a few blocks away. But this is what I call change of subject. When you saw him leave what you referred to as the lobby of your shoe store, was the floor made of marble and concrete? And then Mr. Brewer answered, terrazzo. And Belin said, terrazzo between the sidewalk and the front door? And he said, yes. If you want to look this kind of questioning up, this is, say, volume 7, page 1 or 7. Then Belin said, where were you when you first saw him? And Brewster said, by the hosiery bar about 10 feet away. And then Belin said, is there anything else you can think of that bears on this? Asking this particular witness, is there anything you can think of? And Brewster says, no. And Belin said, well, please thank Hardy's Shoe Store for letting you take time to be here. We thank you very much. Now, that was the interrogation, page 1 to 7 of David Belin. But Penn Jones, Jr. in Texas, the same gentleman who wrote Forgive My Grief, the volumes I told you about, published an article dated August 26, 1971, in which he goes on to say that later testimony revealed that Mr. Brewer, Johnny Calvin Brewer, was the assistant manager of the shoe store in the Oak Cliff section of Dallas, but he was not the person who sent the police to get Harvey Oswald at the theater. Penn Jones wrote, unrecorded by Brewer or Belin, David Belin, this is the lawyer now for the CIA investigation, is the fact that a close friend of Jack Ruby's in the shoe store, Tommy Rowe, worked at that shoe store where Oswald allegedly walked up, and Rowe has told relatives that he, not Brewer, pointed out Oswald. But Rowe, this same Tommy Rowe, was so close to Jack Ruby that shortly afterwards he moved into Ruby's apartment on Ewing Street right after Ruby went to jail. Ruby went to jail on Sunday night when he shot Lee Harvey Oswald. And then the man that worked in the shoe store who called the police moved into Ruby's apartment and lived in Jack Ruby's apartment right after that incident. There was just that 2-day lapse from when Oswald was arrested and the man at the shoe store moved into the apartment of Jack Ruby. Now, no questions were asked about the men at the shoe store to really probe the relationship of those men to any persons involved in the assassination. Another interesting item which is important is a letter from David Belin which I got out of the National Archives through another researcher, dated January 29, 1964. He was an attorney for the Warren Commission, and he wrote to Mr. J. Lee Rankin, who was the head attorney for the Warren Commission, this letter. He said, there are three basic reasons for suggesting a polygraph test for Marina Oswald. A substantial portion of her testimony by Marina is not subject to ordinary tests of credibility. Insofar as the public is concerned, we believe that the submission to a polygraph examination would serve to substantiate before the final publication of the Warren Report. If under polygraph examination it were shown that Marina Oswald had not been truthful in her testimony, it could throw an entirely new light on aspects of the investigation. Now, I read this letter. It was written in 1964, and I wrote to David Bellin in Nebraska, and I said to him, dear Mr. Bellin, I have spent 8 years reading the testimony before the Warren Commission, before the attorneys, and I have cross-filed the testimony of Marina Oswald, and I would like to submit now that a whole new light of aspect be thrown on the investigation, changing the story that Oswald did it alone to the fact that Lee Harvey Oswald never owned a rifle or shot a rifle. Now, I had spent 8 years cross-filing witness testimony that I'll talk about briefly here. Marina Oswald was a total liar, and I can say this unequivocally on the air, and let the chips fall where they may. She changed her testimony before the FBI and the Warren Commission continuously. She was promised citizenship by the FBI 3 weeks before the assassination of John Kennedy, volume 16, page 33 of the Warren Commission hearings again. There's a letter by Lee Harvey Oswald that was written to the Soviet Embassy in Washington, and he said, the FBI visited us here in Dallas on November the 1st. James Hostie, the FBI agent, told Marina that she could stay in the United States, that she would have protection. This is what he said, that she could defect from the Soviet Union. And I don't trust the notorious FBI. Now, this was Lee Harvey Oswald putting in letter, a documented letter dated 15 days before he was dead. And an agent of the FBI was visiting with his wife and offering her protection, and almost the same amount as citizenship, that she was here temporarily on a visa, she could stay in this country. This is volume 16, page 33. And I wrote, as I say, I wrote to David Bellin, and I told him how I went through the witness testimony of 30 people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. The names of Samuel Balin, George Bowie, Max Clark, George de Morenschild, Jean de Morenschild, Lydia Dimitrik, Declan Ford, Catherine Ford, Alexander Gibson, Everett Glover, Dorothy Gravitas, Paul Gregory, Peter Paul Gregory, Elena Hall, John Hall, Charles Harris, Mrs. Harris, Frank Kristenick, Max Kleiner, Helen Leslie, Ilya Mammatov, Anna Meller, Theo Meller, Michael Payne. There were some other names on that list of the Voshinins, also the Voshinins, and Mr. and Mrs. Voshinin. I cross-filed those testimonies for 8 years and realized that this was an espionage operation of the Galen operation of a group of emigres imported from Germany and white Russian community into the Dallas-Fort Worth area, that it was a defense intelligence agency operation, and that the lies that Marina Oswald was telling were substantiated by espionage agents. Now, the condition of the Warren Report in the article where they set up the Warren Report, the witnesses were to have two members of the Warren Commission in on the testimony the day that the testimony was taken from these witnesses. And I cross-filed also the days that members of the Warren Commission were present and who was there. When Samuel Balin gave his testimony, no witness was present. When George Bowie gave his testimony, no witness was present. In fact, none of these down the line, only Declan Ford, had members of the commission there. He had Earl Warren and Gerald Ford, Norman Redlich, several attorneys, and Earl Warren and Gerald Ford were there when Catherine Ford gave her testimony. And all the members of the Warren Commission were there when Michael Payne gave his testimony, and also Peter Gregory, a few members. But for the most part, Mr. Liebler, and Wellesley Liebler and Albert Jenner were the two attorneys interviewing these witnesses, except for David Bellin, again with Mrs. Gravitas, Dorothy Gravitas, and she was part of the Defense Intelligence Operation, and he took her testimony. And there was no basis. In fact, this was third-person testimony because Dorothy Gravitas had never met Lee Harvey Oswald in her life or Marina Oswald. So Balin was taking third-person testimony that was to go into the Warren Report as final on Lee and Marina Oswald. And I took, cross-filed all the names of the people in the room when these 30 witnesses were interrogated and which members of the Warren Commission were present. As I say, none were present when Balin gave his testimony, or George Bowie, or Max Clark, or George de Morenchild, or Jean de Morenchild, Lydia Dimitrik, Alexandra Gibson, Everett Glover, Dorothy Gravitas. No member of the Warren Commission was present. Paul Gregory, Elena Hall, John Hall, Frank Kristenick, Alex Kleiner, Ilya Mammatov, and Anna Meller. Now, there were certain witnesses that were called, for example, like Lydia Dimitrik, whose name was in a book that Marina Oswald had when she was in the Soviet Union. I beg your pardon, it was Lee Harvey Oswald. Had her name when he was in the Soviet Union as a member of our intelligence agencies, and they never questioned when she was asked by Albert Janner whether she saw Lee Harvey Oswald in the Soviet Union. The same way Marina Oswald had in the Soviet Union a notebook that had the name Anna Meller in it before she arrived in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And Anna Meller was never asked under oath whether she had any written letters going back and forth or had met Lee and Marina Oswald in the Soviet Union. The night that Lee and Marina Oswald met was at a public meeting, and they went to the home of a person in the Soviet Union who had just come back from the United States. And that was never investigated, whether that person came from Texas, Fort Worth, or Dallas, or New Orleans, the places that Lee Harvey Oswald was to travel and live in. So that by breaking down this testimony of all these various witnesses and which members of the commission asked the questions, as I say, Liebler would ask some questions, Wellesley Liebler, and Albert Janner would ask other questions. And the witnesses were giving different accounts of the same events. And by breaking them down and doing this extensive work for 8 years, I came across an espionage operation which could be linked to Reinhard Gehlen and the Nazis that incorporated the CIA, that formed our CIA when it was the OSS and became the CIA. So after 8 years of research, I wrote to David Bellin, who's now the head investigator for CIA domestic activities, and said, it's time to open up this finding. Your book is false. It's based on false premises. It isn't done by proper investigative techniques. And yet the same David Bellin has been appointed by Gerald Ford, also of the Warren Commission, to investigate domestic CIA when he was the notorious CIA lawyer on the Warren Commission, taking important testimony even just from one person there, Mrs. Gravitas, whose son-in-law, Mr. Mammatov, is working and had worked and does work with Army intelligence, and he gives his background in before his testimony at the Warren Commission of Military Intelligence. David Bellin was interviewing Mrs. Gravitas, a family of military intelligence, and he has been selected by Gerald Ford to investigate domestic CIA activities. Now, the committee back in Washington, or the four or five committees, have a loophole here. They can say that they were assigned to investigate domestic activity against anti-war protesters, because the articles that broke the story to Seymour Hersh had to do with 10,000 files of CIA investigations of domestic citizens. We talked about that last week, 2 weeks ago. I talked about the loophole there. The allegations were that the CIA files on at least 10,000 citizens. But Miles Copeland, who had been with the CIA for 20 years, who's now living in London, told the London Times this week they have files on 100 million American citizens. The at least 10,000 is an understatement, but a loophole. But he feels that they have files on 100 million. Now, I bring this up because, again, I have referred to Volume 5, page 100 of the hearings before the Commission on the assassination of President Kennedy, where Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission asked J. Edgar Hoover if this investigation on the John Kennedy assassination would be open for all time. And they agreed that the case would never close that they said the authority goes on indefinitely. Gerald Ford asked J. Edgar Hoover, does the authority from the president, which gave you the FBI the responsibility to conduct this investigation, have a terminal point? Is an authority that goes on indefinitely? And J. Edgar Hoover said, very definitely so. The president wanted a full and thorough investigation of this matter. Now, Gerald Ford, the president of the United States, cannot handle the investigation of the Watergate or the investigation of the CIA in the Watergate without going all the way back to Dallas, Texas, partly because E. Howard Hunt is the main connecting link to both. There is also Mr. Fiorino, Mr. Frank Sturgis, and the Cuban community and domestic spying will take you back to Dallas. No matter what route they take, they're going to end there. So it's absolutely necessary for Gerald Ford to appoint or see that Mr. David Belon of the Warren Commission continues to conceal domestic CIA activities which were against their charter in 1947. Now, the excuse is in case there's foreigners involved that would jeopardize the security of the United States. But I don't think the murder of a president, John F. Kennedy, falls into the category of National Security Council murders unless the powers that be decide that John Kennedy's presidency isn't in the interest of national security. Now, Sherman Skolnick in Chicago claims that there is a copy of a document saying that John Kennedy's presidency is not in the interest of national security. So the powers that be in the 40 committee could go ahead and order his murder because they have interpreted that his presidency is not safe for us. But I think these matters have to be held in an open forum and get the evidence out on the table. And I hope that after the conference in Boston, a lot of us will sit down and decide what courses to take for more positive action, because each of us is seeing links to all the assassinations, and they're leading up again to the Watergate and to the CIA involvement in Watergate. I brought some minutes of the meetings, of the December 16th meeting of the Warren Commission in 1963. They had their first meeting, and they were trying to decide how to select their staff. And I think it's pertinent when you think of how Mr. Kissinger and Rockefeller and David Belon are selecting their staff to investigate the CIA. These are a few minutes from their meetings of December the 16th, which again came out of the National Archives. I got them from David Lifton's book, The Document Addendum of the Warren Report. And if you send me a self-addressed envelope, I can give you a bibliography which includes that book. It's a must. And this is a book on the Warren Commission meeting, members of the Warren Commission, this prestigious blue ribbon committee that met identical to the kind that's meeting now in the CIA. The subject came up, I just brought one page to read to you, on the selection of the staff. And these are some of the things they talked about, that the security clearance on files. Everybody who would be working on the files had to have a security clearance or a top secret clearance, and that they would go through the Department of Justice and the GSA. And in quotes, they said, I'm hoping that we won't have to borrow or have anyone investigating this, but we'll use people already cleared from the agencies. Another plan, they would, of course, have a guard on the floor 24 hours a day. The special staff would have their own files. Alan Dulles would have special files, and John J. McCloy locked up file cabinets in the office. Now, the workers on these investigations on the Warren Commission would have top secret clearances. The secretarial help would be without question from the Department of Defense. I mentioned before in other programs they'd be CIA girls now on maternity leave. It said, we won't go into the open market for help. We'll rely on the Department of Defense and the CIA. Well, this is all beautiful unless the CIA and the Defense Department are accused of the crime. And again, it's like John Mitchell and Richard Nixon investigating the Watergate. And now the lawyers, they talked about the staff. They said they will have to beg and borrow all the staff they could from the agencies because they had to hurry up with their report and they don't have time for long checks. And the selection of the lawyers for the Warren Commission, including David Belon, are locked up for 75 years in the National Archives, the methods by which they came upon these CIA lawyers. But because every person who touched a page or locked the door or kept the files going was from the Department of Defense and the CIA, you can see how the Blue Ribbon Commission is going to be operating back there. Now, the CIA is going to be investigating the CIA, and that's all there is to it. It's going to be another cover-up. Senator Weicker had warned us that the Watergate cover-up is still going on. Senator Baker has told us, I mentioned last week, there's a whole range of unanswered questions more important now than ever before than last year about the CIA and the Watergate. Jack Anderson in July 74 quoted Charles Colson as saying that Richard Nixon fears the CIA. He can't investigate them, for they must be blackmailing him over something. This is in July 74, the quotation. They have something heavy on Nixon. It has to do with close ties of him to the CIA and possibly the Hughes Organization. And it went on, quoting Charles Colson, that Nixon is a prisoner of the CIA. There was an article in today's paper, Ron Ziegler, crying about the situation of Richard Nixon being tantamount to a prison. Sitting in his office was similar to a prisoner's cell. And I agree with him. Stephen Bull is his CIA babysitter. He can't get a word out about what happened to him, even if he wanted to. He said, if I go to the hospital, I'll be killed. And Richard Nixon has been selected as the fall guy for this whole episode while the agents of the CIA continue covering up domestic CIA. Now, last week we talked about Elmer Davis. He was here. We're talking about the CIA and E. Howard Hunt and the Los Angeles Police Department finding a scapegoat to cover for their Beverly Hills burglary into Dr. Fielding's office. There also was an article in the New York Times this last week, since we met, on the Cuban exiles, admitting that they picketed and spied for the CIA starting in 1960 down in Miami, Cuba. Miami, Florida, rather. There was a $2 million budget under one particular gentleman who's now dead. He died last year. Jose Joaquin Sangenis Podemo, his name is. He was murdered last year. He was 61 years old. Before he died, he was given a commendation, a secret commendation from the CIA, a merit medal. He is dead. He operated Operation 40, a counterintelligence group down in Miami, who, if they admit, had $2 million budget. You have to ask, what relationships would this man have had, or did he have, to Frank Sturgis in Miami, alias Frank Fiorina, who also played part of the cover-up in the John Kennedy assassination with the press announcement that Oswald was a communist? Did any of this $2 million budget go into the plans to murder John Kennedy in Florida? There were two plans to murder him, two assassination teams set up in addition to the Dallas assassination team. One was in Miami, Florida, and one was in Chicago, and each one was foiled. In Miami, Kennedy was taken by the helicopter right to the hotel where he was to speak, or the lecture hall, and he didn't have a motorcade. The Chicago football game was called off because of the murder of DM, and he didn't go out to Chicago. And then the next public appearance was Dallas, and that's where he got it. But did this $2 million budget, starting in the late 60s, have anything to do with the assassination team in Miami, Florida? They were doing domestic snooping, and the article came out this week, dated January the 4th, in the New York Times. As I say, Copeland came out with the article that at least 10,000 is an understatement. He says there's 100 million Americans that are being kept in files in the CIA. He referred to the Internal Revenue, 78 million names, the Veteran Administration, 15 million, FBI records, 160 million, and the Secret Service, 150,000 names, and all these are put into a computer data bank which the CIA uses as part of a domestic operation. Another article I came across was the use of the CIA police training domestically. And I am bringing up again the importance of investigating the CIA domestically, because there are four committees going on in Congress now, and you might write to them on any one or all of these subjects. If I move along too fast, maybe pick up one, but write to them, as many as you can. February the 7th, 1973, was an article, UPI story. The ex-CIA head testifies on police training. Now, John Mowry, the CIA station chief, who was the head of the CIA in Greece at the time that the CIA helped overthrow Greece, is now legal counsel in the United States, and he defends the CIA briefing policemen in the United States. He He wants to continue the program. They admitted that the CIA is training programs for domestic police force in surveillance, wiretap, and organization of intelligence. He, a man who helped overthrow one country into a fascist dictatorship where we became hated for the role that we played in putting the military junta in Greece, Mr. John Mowry is now legal counsel in Washington, D.C., defending the use of the CIA training police in the United States. And you can see this is an iffy subject in terms of control in the United States. The way it was done in Greece, it could work here if the CIA controls enough police departments. That is an area that should be investigated. There also was an article in the Los Angeles Free Press in July 1970 about Don Freed, who had evidence planted against him to try to entrap him and Shirley Sutherland. That was in 1970. And when he brought a lawsuit against the police department, the thing was settled because it had to do with a James Jarrett of the LAPD, who was a CIA acting as a domestic saboteur, who skipped LAPD in 1970 when he was exposed for what he was and went on to Israel to work for the CIA in Israel. This was in 1970. We know the CIA has been working domestically, but I want to mention a few of these examples, a few more, since the one I talked about last week. I have another article from The Militant dated July 73, where the CIA was a link to attacks on radicals. Now, this article is important because it ties into what I said was the SLA is the CIA 4 years later. This is about Cuban terrorists in 1970 who attacked the offices of the Socialist Workers' Party. They set fire to the Ash Grove, the coffee house, and three terrorists were arrested by the name of Pelez, Castro, and Gonzalez. And in April 71, they said that they were recruited in Mexico City and trained in army guerrilla warfare training camps linked to the CIA, and that the explosives used to bomb the Shell Oil Corporation were obtained from the CIA. They had done 10 bombings in the Los Angeles area in 1968 and were bombing the Radical Coffee House and the Socialist Workers' Party, and these Cubans who were linked to the Alpha 66, again, that goes back to the Cuban group working with E. Howard Hunt, working in the Kennedy assassination, the Bay of Pigs operation, were in Los Angeles doing bombings in 1968. There is a link here. I'm jumping from a lot of subjects with link from the Kennedy assassination to domestic violence to also I've linked them in my SLA article, but the CIA was buying the explosives for Shell Oil Company in order to make it look as if terrorists were in the United States as early as 1968. It's important to go into all the allegations of the CIA training policemen in the United States, the links of the Los Angeles Police Department to E. Howard Hunt, and the White House and the use of the Cuban Committee. Another link of the CIA that I have mentioned many times is the alleged payment of E. Howard Hunt to Mr. Rangel, alias Alexander Zatko, who's sitting up at San Quentin, who was hired to kill Sirhan Sirhan. Now, these links of the CIA keep going. I have many, many files on the subject. Time is running out. I'll talk next week some more about domestic CIA operations, including the exposure of Mr. Kerbegovic down in Los Angeles, who I said was an agent of the CIA who is trying to get out of a trial for killing three people at the Pan American Airport on the grounds that he's insane. Time is running out because I did want to go into David Belin extensively today, but I think that there was a national outrage when Mr. Cox and Richardson were removed from the Justice Department. I wish people were more aware of David Belin and the CIA so they could protest in Washington about his being the counsel for the Blue Ribbon Committee. But unfortunately, there aren't not enough people into this, so we'll do the best we can, and if you have the feeling or inclination, write letters to your congressman. Well, that's all for this week. Time has run out again. I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KELRB-FM in Carmel, California.